Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we begin our program by talking with you about apples. Erica Janik, our guest today, a historian and author of a number of books, including her most recent, which is titled Apple, A Global History. She writes frequently for Wisconsin Magazine of History and other publications. She is also a producer here at Wisconsin for the Wisconsin Life segments you enjoy on both networks of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have her with us. And certainly, if you would like to join in, I had a question about apples, maybe their history. What about their health benefits? There are lots of interesting facts in this book. I can tell you that for sure. I had a lot of fun reading it, and I'm pretty sure you will, too, as we visit with her. So give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question there. I think we're having little bit of trouble with our software right now, but it'll come around, Erica. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Apples. Why apples?
Why not apples?
Why not apples? I love apples.
I think some of it for me was really, I grew up in Washington State, where apples are really everywhere. You see the Washington State logo of the apple everywhere you go. Every grocery store has it. You see, Washington apples are promoted everywhere. So I grew up kind of surrounded by apples. But frankly, those apples I was eating weren't terribly delicious. I don't want to impugn the whole state. There's, I'm sure, wonderful apples. But a lot of the apples I was eating were the grocery store apples, those red delicious and weren't so delicious. And it was really, I actually moved to Wisconsin, and which is where I had the most amazing apple that really changed my life. It was so delicious.
Which one? Gala?
It was a pink pearl apple.
Pink pearl.
I found it at the Dane County Farmers Market. And it's the most, it's kind of a homely looking apple on the outside. It's kind of this yellowy brown, has kind of a rougher texture to it. But then you bite into it, and in addition to being so, so delicious, it has this beautiful marbly ivory pink interior. I'd just never seen an apple like that before. And this sounds so corny, but I literally almost cried. It was so delicious. And it really just changed the way I saw apples. And I just became really interested in learning about different varieties and really discovering this apple world that, I thought I knew growing up in Washington, but no, really, there's this really exciting world of local apples that I was really discovering after I moved here to Wisconsin, which is kind of ironic, being from Washington.
Well, we produce some pretty good apples here in the state, by golly.
Very delicious apples, really.
Well, I tell you what, as we think about apples, though, and as you point out in your book, apples were not native to the United States.
No, we think about apples as being this very American fruit. There's nothing more American than apple pie, but apples are from about as far away as you can imagine from here. They're from a country in Central Asia, Kazakhstan. They grow in the mountains between Kazakhstan and China. And actually, Kazakhstan's largest city is Alma-Ata, which means the father of apples. And it's believed that all domesticated apples originate in these mountains. And the city just sounds amazing. You read reports of apple seedlings growing up through the cracks in the sidewalks. And the mountainsides are just covered in apple trees. And this area is actually really rich in fruit. It sounds like paradise. I really want to go there.
Yeah, wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, I mean, I just think about when the apples are blossoming in the spring, how delicious it must smell. And then once the trees start bearing fruit, I just can't even imagine. It must be so beautiful. And this area just seems magical in of itself. 90% of the domesticated fruits that we eat today come from this area of Kazakhstan. So things like pears, raspberries, strawberries, plums, they all come from this area of the world. So it's really kind of a magical place. And so we think apples have been growing there for about 4.5 million years.
Well, it'd be really fun. You wonder, what is it, the soil? It's probably some combination of soil and climate and who knows what.
Yeah, I mean, some of the theories they talk about, just the plate tectonics, just the way that the continents kind of moved and aligned themselves kind of created this kind of micro climate that was perfect for kind of birthing all of these fruits.
Yeah. Well, we have every one of our lines filled. And maybe we should go to the phone. Should
sure,
we do that?
Let's
Lauren,
do it.
Let's go to you in Chicago. Hi, Lauren.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Actually, I listen to NPR in Chicago usually, and I heard about an apple called the Sweet Tango, I think.
Yep.
And I was wondering where I could find one of those, if you've ever tried one, anything like that.
I don't know where you can find one. You're finding them in a lot of grocery stores lately. This is a newer apple that came out of the University of Minnesota. Minnesota has a really big fruit breeding program, despite actually not being a huge apple producer. They're actually, I think, in the 30s of the number of states of big apple growers. But they really have invested in growing cold weather varieties of apples, and this Sweet Tango is one of their newest varieties. They have kind of a, I can't think of the word. They have kind of a system that they're doing in the way that they're distributing these apples, and that you kind of have to be a licensed grower. You have to belong to this kind of club of growers in Minnesota.
Yeah.
So currently the university is really limiting who can grow these apples. So they are really hard to find, which is why I can't tell you exactly where you can find them. I know you can find them at, you know, some supermarkets. They tend to be in a smaller supply, though, because there just really isn't the production of them at this moment. So I would just say, you know, ask your local store if they can have them. I mean, that's really the way to get these produce into your stores, to really talk to the store manager and say that you want them and see if they can figure out a way to get them from these Minnesota growers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Kate in New Holstein, let's go to you. Hi, Kate.
Good morning. I would like to know why, when I was a kid, we would eat apples out of the pasture, any old place, and we would just take our fill of them, and now we have apple trees, and we can't get decent apples unless we spray, and I'm wondering, is there a natural way to prevent this? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say, I don't know if apples are more diseased now. You know, there's a big problem with lots of fruits and vegetables, and all crops in general, is that these monocultures are kind of creating environments where our food is more susceptible to certain bugs and plant diseases. The coddling moth has long been a problem with apples. And apples have been treating them and trying to figure out different ways to kind of keep the disease off them for about 100 years now. And so I'm not really sure. I know that there's a lot of different organic methods of growing apples, natural things that you can put on the apples to help kind of keep away these bugs and diseases. I think as we're growing more of these monocultures of apples instead of having some of the diversity, it does kind of increase the disease. There's just more disease in these apples.
You wonder what's going on in Kazakhstan, if they have those kinds of problems over there.
Yeah, I think in Kazakhstan, though, they're growing wild apples. They're not really, I mean, there is some growing of domestic apples, people that are breeding a particular apple variety, but something that apples are in these wild varieties is they're really remarkably diverse. Apples are kind of like humans in that their offspring don't look like their parent tree at all. It takes the genetic material of both of its parents and creates an offspring that can be very, very different from that parent tree, and that kind of creates this diversity in the orchard that does help with some of this disease resistance.
Larry in Milwaukee, we are on to you. Hi, Larry.
Hi. I have a question about making hard cider.
Okay.
I buy unpasteurized apple juice, or apple cider, at a place in Milwaukee in Walker's Point, Times Square Pizza. It's an unlikely place to get cider, but they have it from, I think, Moe's Apple Orchards in Mequon or in that area. And in the past, I have bought their cider, and it's frozen, and I unfreeze it and open it up, just, you know, twist off the top and leave it out. And in a few days, it ferments beautifully, and it has a nice hard bite to it. At least that's the way it was for the past few years. The batch this year apparently, or possibly, is somehow different, because I opened it up and it fermented differently. It didn't taste as good. And I was told that the amount of yeast in the air is the factor. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering whether there's something else that's involved in that. What makes...
Well, the yeast in the air would is certainly part of it, Erica.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, how much yeast are, I mean, that's how apple cider will ferment naturally, is just by the yeast in the air. And if you get this unpasteurized cider, it will basically start turning itself into alcohol almost instantly in a room temperature room. I would also wonder whether the cider that you bought is being made with the same apples. I mean, I'm not exactly sure what is tasting different about your cider, but, you know, there are so many different varieties of apples. So the juice that you're originally starting with, you know, how much sugar is in that apple to begin with. Some apples have much higher sugar content than others. Some are tartar than others. So the juice might be, you know, maybe that orchard is also using a different apple to produce their cider. And so you're also getting some of that variation in the apples, as well as there being maybe a decrease in the amount of yeast in the air.
And sometimes the producers will use maybe three or four or even five varieties of apples in the cider. In one cider.
That's
so
right.
That percentage could change, too.
That's right. Some of the best ciders in the world are the ones that are made with more than one type of apple. You really want that blend to really get that, all of the different, you know, sweet and tart and bitter, all those notes together really create a delicious cider. And a lot of cider makers, when they're making their hard cider, will try to find apples that are probably not apples you actually want to eat. They would taste terrible if you ate them, but they ferment beautifully. So there are a lot of factors that go into what exactly is in your container that you're buying and the product that you get out of it.
Mm-hmm. Could you comment on Cortland's and the varieties, New York and New Jersey versus Michigan and Wisconsin Cortland's?
Well, Cortland apples are, as I mentioned a little bit ago, that apples are will create offspring that are dramatically different than the parent tree. And so in order to create a Cortland apple, you have to graft this tree. And so basically, these varieties of apples are clones of this parent Cortland tree. And so the varieties that you get in all of these different states are basically starting out the same. But, you know, if you think about, all of these places have very different climates and very different soil, and all of these things play a big factor in what your apple is going to taste like in the end, whether, you know, whatever the weather was that year, what the soil type is like. All of these things play a part in what that resultant apple will taste like. So a Cortland will taste different in Minnesota than it will taste in New Jersey.
Yeah, absolutely. There you go, Larry. Thank you very much for calling. Let's turn to Ann in Stevens Point next. Hi, Ann.
Hi there. You were talking about ways to protect your apples organically. I ran across a really great way this year that at least takes care of a lot of the insects. It's very simple. You take a milk jug, fill it about two-thirds, well, you put in a cup of sugar, a cup of vinegar, fill it about two-thirds full of water, and throw a banana peel in there, hang that in your tree, and you'll be amazed at how many insects you collect. In fact, it's pretty awful at the end of the year, but an awful lot of them avoid the fruit, and I had much better luck with my apples this year, so that's just a simple trick.
That's great. I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, I know that lots of different growers use all different kinds of different methods to
absolutely
try to keep the bugs away from their apples.
Yeah, and thank you very much for calling, Ann. That's a good suggestion. Other people have used, that's come up on the show in the past. Kyle posted on our Facebook page and says, he got sweet tango apples at Wood Market in Door County in September. Unfortunately, they're gone until next year. So, and a caller wanted to share that the New Yorker magazine recently had a long article on both Honey Crisps and sweet tangos.
Yeah, I actually just read that article yesterday. It's fortuitous timing.
And Mary on Facebook wonders if you can suggest best apple varieties for making cider, juice, and so forth.
Well, if you want to make a sweet apple juice, this is really like all eating, like whether an apple you want to eat or whether an apple you want to drink, mm-hmm. It really is highly dependent on the type of person you are and whether you like the sweeter apples or the tartar apples. If you are making a juice, some of the softer apples, things like Gallas and Jonathan's will make a nice juice. They're widely available. You can find them at local orchards as well as at your grocery store. These are apples that tend to make a nicer juice. Things like Red Delicious don't have as much flavor. This is my pick on the Red Delicious Hour.
Yeah.
But but
I'm not a big fan of either.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, you often find a lot of apple juice concentrate is made out of the Red Delicious apple. But I think if you find a more flavorful apple, things like the Gala, the Jonathan, Macintosh, these are things that will make a better juice. I mean, it's really an apple that you like to eat is an apple that you'll also like to drink. So
there you go. Erica Janik, our guest today, historian and author of Apple, A Global History. Having fun talking with her today about the history of apples. And you can join in with your questions. Are you an apple fan? Do you have a variety that brings a tear to your eye when you are able to enjoy it? Maybe you grow apples. What types do you grow? How do you use them? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking apples today with author Erica Janik, her book, Apple, A Global History. And Phil on Facebook has an interesting story to share. And he says, I was told the story that the University of Minnesota, the apple test area, had an extreme amount of winter damage some years ago. A professor told the staff to grub the many damaged trees, numbering in the hundreds. A single beat-up tree was passed over by a grad student working there. That one poor, half-dead tree became the source of all Honeycrisp.
I, too, have heard a variation on that story. They actually had selected the apples. So the apple breeding program is really about growing a bunch of different apples, and then they taste them, and they figure out which ones are the best, and then the ones that make it through that first test go on to the next year, and the ones that don't kind of, well, get cut down. Mm-hmm. And so they'd actually had selected what became the cross that was the Honeycrisp in the 1960s, but the tree had really struggled. I think this is what he's referring to. It wasn't producing apples every year. It would produce them for a couple years in a row, and then it would nothing. And the tree was looking really scraggly. And it's true, you know, it's kind of like this twist of fate, you know, on that one day that the person tasted the apple, did they mark it as, you know, cut this tree down or keep it for next year? And thankfully, you know, for the Honeycrisp, they did eventually figure out that this scraggly tree that looked like it wasn't going to make it was actually a delicious apple. And I think the University of Minnesota released it, I think, in 1991. But, you know, as I said, they did that cross in the 60s. So it took about 30 years for this apple to actually come out onto the marketplace. And this isn't really very uncommon. It takes a really long time to develop a new fruit variety. And there's kind of it's almost like the arms race to, you know, produce the next iPod or something like that. You know, it's just as fierce in fruit breeding to try to get the next big thing.
The next great apple. Mm-hmm. And there are some really good ones out there. And, you know, we didn't really talk about how the apple wound up coming to the United States. And maybe we should talk about that for a minute before we go back to the phones.
Yeah, definitely. So apples come from this area of Kazakhstan, and they really start spreading with humans as people are passing on trade routes through Asia. They're bringing apples with them because apples are delicious to eat, and their animals are eating apples as well. And if you think about an apple seed, it's that teardrop shape, and it's very smooth and hard. It's basically the perfect shape to pass intact through an animal's digestive tract. And so as animals were traveling, horses, they were dropping seeds,
and, so to speak. Yeah.
Yes, and humans were bringing apples along with them. And really, there's a great essay by Henry David Thoreau about wild apples, and he talks about how the history of apples is remarkably connected with that of man. And it's really true. You find humans finding apples that they really love. People start breeding apple varieties about 3,000 years ago. It's one of the first domesticated fruits. And so colonists were bringing their favorite apples along with them to North America. So we had apples very early. People were bringing some of their favorite varieties. They were just dropping seeds and seeing what grew. So this is how apples really started spreading everywhere around the world. Explorers were bringing them to South America as well as Australia and New Zealand. So apples were really growing on basically every continent except Antarctica.
We have Carl in Madison with a question for your comment. Hi, Carl.
Howdy. My question, actually, Larry is probably best suited to answer it, but can I offer a quick speculation? I seem to remember in the 40s and 50s that every farm in Wisconsin had like a half acre at least of different fruit trees, and it was always in the pasture. And, you know, they always tell you to clean up around your fruit trees, not to unless you want to encourage all kinds of pests. And I'm wondering if the cows back then just ate up all the, you know, the fallen apples, and that cycle of parasites was just, you know, couldn't continue.
Well,
but that's not my question.
Well, I don't know.
Okay, here's my question then, Larry. And I'm not a farm kid, but had relatives and friends that had farms and spent a lot of time as a kid in farms. I heard from some agriculture students back in probably the 70s, early 70s, that someplace on the UW campus there is a tree which is produces a popular apple that is the original tree of that kind, and that all of the offspring in all the orchards all over the United States were, what do you call them, scions when you graft them off of that tree. And I don't know if you can make a scion off a scion, but is that true? Supposedly, they didn't want to reveal where that tree was also.
If it's here, I don't know about it. And Erica, you haven't heard about it either. You know, I'm wondering, Carl, if that story about the Wisconsin tree was may have been the Minnesota tree and the University of Minnesota. And, you know, in the telling, it's sort of went from Minnesota to Wisconsin, because I think I'd know about it if there was one of those trees here.
Yeah, as far as I know, I certainly can't think of anything on the UW campus. I mean, it's really Minnesota that has a major apple
right.
growing program and has been really involved in finding apples that grow very well here.
I think it's Minnesota, but I probably have horticulturist friends from UW listening in as we speak, and they'll call and straighten me out if that's the case. So stay listening, Carl. Thanks for calling. Lynette in Hubertus, up to you. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I like to bake up pumpkin and then puree it in the food processor for the dogs throughout the winter. And I had some not bad apples, but I just didn't care to eat them. And I decided to just throw those into the food processor as well with the pumpkin, and I added a little bit of cinnamon, and I'm not so sure the dogs are going to get this. it was quite tasty, and I'm thinking I'm going to try to come up with a recipe of some sort to be able to use that puree, because it was very, very good. My question is, my local orchard will be closing for the season very soon, and they've got quite a bit on clearance right now, and I'd like for eating apples, honey crisps, and whatnot. And I'd like to know how to best preserve a large quantity for eating throughout the winter.
Well, the way to really keep your apples is to keep them cool and somewhere dry. These are often hard conditions to find. If you're in your basement, can sometimes be wetter than you want it to be. But really keeping the apples cold is really what you want to do in order to keep them for several months. I've had some success. This isn't the best method, but I live in a condo, so it's the best method that I have. I've put apples in a cooler out on my balcony, and they've lasted, 3 or 4 months, and that's been okay. Even in the refrigerator, some of the apples will keep pretty well for about a month or two. Really keeping them cool and dry, if you can find those, that's really the best way to keep eating apples. I was going to say, until you emphasize the eating, that, in the past, the way that people kept apples for the winter is they turned them into hard cider.
Right.
That was really the way to do it, because your trees and your local orchard would produce far more apples than you could possibly eat. And so people were turning them into hard cider for drinking, but also for preserving foods, because you could use that cider. It would then become cider vinegar in a mm-hmm. later stage of fermentation, which would then help with, making your sauerkrauts and other kinds of preserved things for the winter. So you could also go that route if you weren't looking for the eating apple. You could also have a drinking apple that would last all winter long.
There you go, Lynette.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Susan in Bristol, hi to you.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Thank you for this program. I love apples, and I have two questions. The first one is silly. The second one is something I just really want to know. And But the first question is, was there really a Johnny Appleseed?
There was really a Johnny Appleseed. That's not silly at all.
No, and you talk about that in your book.
So Johnny Appleseed was a real person. His name was John Chapman. He was born in Massachusetts in the 18th century. He eventually moves to the Ohio Valley, Ohio, Indiana area, and he is spreading apple seedlings, just like the tale that we know. There are a few other details about him that are...
That's so pleasant.
Right. I was like, what should I say about that? So one of the reasons that he was planting apple seedlings, there were two things, kind of a religious reason. He was a follower of Emanuel Swedenborg. And in this religion, there was this kind of belief that planting things in the natural world corresponded to things in the afterlife. And so tending to nature, because it was kind of a nature religion, was part of practicing his faith. And so he was planting apple seeds and apple seedlings as part of spreading Swedenborgian beliefs. But he was also kind of a smart businessman. A lot of areas, new states and new territories in the country required colonists and new settlers to have an orchard in their yard. Part of this was because an orchard takes a really long time to produce apples, and they wanted people that were really invested in this new place. And so if you had an orchard, that meant you were going to stay there for a while. And so he was really kind of following the line of white settlement. He was planting all of these orchards so that when the settlers got there, there would be trees there waiting for him, waiting for all of these people. And so he kept doing that out in, what is now the Midwest. And they say that there's a tree in Ohio that was actually planted by Johnny Appleseed. He supposedly planted it in 1830 and that it's still going strong. It must not be producing too many apples because old apple trees tend not to produce that many trees.
Productive.
They retired.
Right. And I say, I don't want to delve too deeply into the unsavory parts of his character, but he was kind of an interesting man. He was never known to really have a fixed address, and he was said to wear a pot on his head and wear a burlap sack, and he didn't wear any shoes. And so he's kind of in this cleaned up image. There's a few other unsavory stories we won't go into.
Oh, yeah. Some really bad ones.
I'm happy to hear that he's not just another Paul Bunyan, though, because I always thought it was such a charming story, and I was hoping it was true.
Yep, it's true.
It's true.
But my real question is, my favorite apples for a long time were Gala and Fuji. And then I tasted a Braeburn, and I thought I went to heaven. Are Fuji's and Gala's like offspring? Are Gucci's and, Gala's offspring of the Braeburn?
No, actually.
Very similar.
All of them have a Red Delicious, strangely, as their one of their parent apples. They're crossed with a different apple. As far as I know, the Braeburn hasn't been crossed with anything else. The Braeburn was developed in New Zealand, and it was actually the first copyrighted apple. This started a new thing that's pretty common now. People are copywriting and trademarking their apple varieties, and the Braeburn was the first. And it's I can't remember what the other one is. I definitely know it has a Red Delicious as one of its parents. The Fuji is a cross of the Red Delicious and the Rawls Jeanette, which is another American apple. So this is what starts happening. There's all these apple varieties that come out of the United States in the 19th century, things like the Red Delicious, the Empire Apple, and these kind of seed orchards in other parts of the country, in Asia and Australia and New Zealand, and apple growers there start crossing American varieties together to make their own new varieties. So the Fuji apple is a Japanese apple that uses two American apples as its starter.
Well, okay. Well, you know, I think that the Braeburn is the Queen Elizabeth of apples, and I'll close it off at that.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, Susan. Appreciate your call. Oh, man. Alan in La Crosse. Hi to you.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I like a medium-sized apple that's juicy and delicious and firm and sweet. And the Honeycrisp apple always filled that bill, at least for the first couple of years. But for some reason or other, now all your Honeycrisp that I can find in the stores are very large apples. Anyway, in the course of looking for a good apple, I was in Quick Trip, and I hesitate to even bring this up because I don't want too many people to find out. But it's called Ambrosia, and it's an apple that they sell. It is so far below the cost that you have to pay for any apple in a big shopping store that it's hard to believe, but that's why I'm kind of trying to guard it. Anyway, where in the world does that come from, and how come The big stores don't have that.
I don't really know what the story of the ambrosia is. I've certainly seen them myself. I know it's not one of the big commercial varieties. I don't think a lot of big growers are growing it, and I'm not sure why. You sound like such a big fan of them. I think I've only had one once. I'll have to try them again. I won't find your source, though. But I'm not really sure what the story is, and you know, the why we have these few varieties in our stores are really these... You know, kind of the story of globalization is kind of the what apples will ship well and keep well and look beautiful. You know, people are really looking for an apple that looks beautiful good. Rather than tastes good. And I think that's actually what's happening with the Honeycrisp. A lot of these apples that you see, let me go back and pick on the Red Delicious again, is that the Red Delicious started out as an actually delicious apple. But over the years, as people were looking, you know, for a really red apple and a really, like, perfectly shaped apple, they kind of bred the taste out of it. And I think this is something that might be happening with the Honeycrisp as well. And this is, I also think, to go back to the Sweet Tango, is why the University of Minnesota is keeping this tighter grip on the Sweet Tango, is because it's like the Honeycrisp got a little bit out of their control. And some growers were, you know, in an effort to make them bigger or make them more beautiful or make them redder, are kind of changing things about them. And this is what's changing mm-hmm. the apple. And this is, you know, in 100 years, a Honeycrisp may not resemble anything of what it originally looked like. Because this is certainly true of the Red Delicious. The Red Delicious didn't used to be this uniformly red apple. It actually started out as a yellow and red apple in Iowa. And, you know, over the last, you know, 150 years, it's really become something completely
different. Yeah. Thank you for calling, Ellen. Appreciate it. Caller Pam wanted to share that Wood Orchard in Door County between Egg Harbor and Fish Creek grows Sweet Tangos, and they do distribute Sweet Tangos, and their website is woodorchard.com. And this is there's also a website for Sweet Tangos, and it's simply Sweet Tango, actually Sweet Tango, only one T in there, .com.
I should say, too, about the Sweet Tango, it's generally ripe in September, so unfortunately, they might even be more difficult than they seem to already be to find because we are a little bit past when the Sweet Tango comes into season.
And UW Extension just posted links to their Apple publications on our Facebook page, which is very cool. Thank you, whoever did that from UW Extension. So if you need some... publications relating to apples, they're on our Facebook page now at the Larry Mueller Show. So that's pretty cool. Let's go to Larry in Cashton. Hi, Larry. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, good morning. Say, I just want to make a comment on the Gale apple. That's my favorite apple for bacon pies. It's a sweet apple, and I pretty much eliminate any sugar in the pie when I make it, and I sprinkle some lemon juice over the top of it and put some butter in there. And I've won a couple of pie baking contests already at the local Fall Fest by doing that. So it's just I've experimented a lot of different apples, and the Gale is my favorite for making pie.
That sounds delicious.
Oh, it sounds great. You're making me hungry, Larry.
Yeah, with a homemade crust all from scratch.
Oh.
So,
thank you.
You bet.
Yep. Appreciate that call. And Frank in Green Bay... Larry, you might be interested in this one. It says when he lived in England, he could buy tart cooking apples, notably Bramley apples, which could weigh over a pound each. In the store in the States, there seem to be no cooking apples, only eating apples you cook with. Any idea why? Well,
I think, you know, the reason you see that is because kind of the commercial apple that big growers are looking for and that we're looking to ship is a very sweet apple, which isn't necessarily a good cooking apple, but it always is a good eating apple. And almost all of the most common varieties you find in the store are these eating apples, because that's really how people are thinking of them. They're not really thinking of the different uses of them as a cooking apple. So you do kind of find, you know, there are these 20 or so varieties that are fairly common in supermarkets. They're also fairly common in taste. You don't really find a lot of variation. They all tend to be fairly sweet. You know, the Granny Smith is probably maybe the exception in that it mm-hmm. has that tartness going for it. But pretty sweet apples is really what the commercial market is demanding.
And I think you say that the Golden Delicious is the most eaten apple in the world?
It is, yeah. The Golden Delicious is an American apple. It was found in West Virginia in the late 19th century. And it is now, I think 60% of the apple market in the world is Golden Delicious. I think the Golden Delicious is actually more popular in Europe than it is in the United States. I mean, I loved the Golden Delicious mm-hmm. when I was a kid. But I think France grows a ton of Golden Delicious apples. The Golden Delicious is kind of surprising, is the yeah. most popular apple.
And Danielle in Madison, let's go to you. Hi, Danielle.
Oh, hi. I have a quick question about the Macintosh apple. My maiden name was Danielle Macintosh, and I've forever been linked with Macintosh apples. And I was wondering, what's the story of the Macintosh apple?
Well, the Macintosh apple is a Canadian apple. It's actually the only Canadian apple that's one of the, you know, that kind of top 20 that you find commercially. And it was discovered by a man named John Macintosh. And he found them growing on his property, I think in Ontario in the early 19th century. I can't remember the date. But I know it was fairly early in the century. And he transplanted the trees to a location closer to his home. And one of these trees became the Macintosh apple. And it was his son that established a nursery and really extensively promoted the Macintosh apple. And the Macintosh is actually the number one apple in Canada. Local pride in their Canadian apples. So that is where they are. They're Canadian.
Wow. And I have a quick funny story to share, too. My mom got remarried, Lisa McIntosh, and she became Lisa Smith. So it's just another kind of apple.
That's great.
And if she becomes a grandma, she'll be Granny Smith.
Yeah,
there it is.
Oh, that's a great story. Thanks, Danielle. You know, I thought you were going to ask about Macintosh or Apple computers, and you have that story in your book as well.
I do, but it's kind of I don't really know the story 100% what it is. There's a lot of speculation on why Steve Jobs chose to name his company Apple. At the time, he'd been working on a friend's farm that was a kind of an apple orchard, and so that's what he'd been doing. He'd been harvesting apples, while working on developing this company on the side. And so there's one story that says that, you know, he just came in and said, we're going to call it Apple. And there's another story where, you know, he was really in, you know, the apple has really long symbolized knowledge. It's mm-hmm. the tree of knowledge in the Garden of Eden. And he also liked the Isaac Newton story. So that these associations with the apple kind of played a part in the naming of his company. But it is kind of, I'm not sure anyone really knows what was going on when he chose that name. But those are the two, like, major stories that come to the naming of the company.
Let's go to Peggy in Superior. Hi, Peggy. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Sure.
I have a mystery apple tree in my front yard, and I know you're not there to identify trees.
I'm not sure I'll be able to, but
it has large, almost like Granny Smith apples, only they're larger. And they're very green and hard for most of the fall. And they stay on the tree all winter. They turn yellow when they freeze. But they hang there all winter long. And they're really not much good for anything except... I have hunters in the family, and we have learned that deer do not like them for, deer bait. Any ideas?
I don't know, but I mean, and part of why I don't know, besides that I should also mention that there are at least 50,000 apple varieties in the world, but that, you know, because a tree produces an offspring that's completely different, you could have an apple in your front yard that is unique to that place that no one else in the world has. And so that's kind of exciting. If you think about it, it may be horrible apples, but no one else has your horrible apples.
Well, I'm sure it's a very old tree, and it's very beautiful in the winter when the snow falls on it.
Oh,
it's almost like having a, you know, a Christmas tree.
Ornaments, yeah.
Decorated by Mother Nature.
Listen, you've got to take a picture of this, Peggy, and post it on my Facebook page.
All right.
Would you do that? I think that would be really fun to see.
Okay.
And maybe we can actually then get, Erica can take a look at it. We can get some other people to take a look at it. Maybe we can tell you what it is.
Okay. Well, you know, it's kind of fun. The only way we can get them off the tree is to actually pick them. They won't shake down.
That's so interesting.
That's so interesting. I definitely want to see this.
Okay.
So go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Get a picture, go to the page, and post.
I will do that.
All right. Thanks, Peggy. Thank you very much. Caller said She loves Ambrosia apples, and she gets them at Quick Trip, too. So apparently the Quick Trips around the state sell Ambrosia apples. Plus, candy bars are 75 cents, but the apples are three for a buck.
Well, that's great. I'm happy to hear that.
Three for a buck. That is a good deal.
That's a really good deal.
A Facebook question from Melissa. We are huge fans of ginger gold apple. Just curious as to where they originated.
I don't know that one either. I'm really sorry about that. I feel like, I don't know why I feel like this. I feel like it's probably a Minnesota apple or it's a New York apple. I mean, even if I don't know exactly where the apples came from, most of the fruit breeding in the world is really concentrated at these two places. The Cornell University has a huge apple growing program. They've released upwards of 60 different kinds of commercial apples. I would actually bet it might be a Cornell apple, but I'm sorry, I don't know the origins of that one.
And we have an email from Linda in Stratford. When I lived in the state of Arkansas, a man would come around selling Ben Davis apples. And then when I returned to Wisconsin, tried to get that apple, nobody had heard of it. Later did some research and found it was one of the parents of the Cortland apple. Are Ben Davis apples grown anymore that you know of?
You do find Ben Davis growing at some smaller orchards. Interestingly, the Ben Davis apple was one of the most popular apples in the 19th century. And the thing that's, we're going back to the Red Delicious, because it all goes back to the Red Delicious, is that the Red Delicious actually was in a competition to find a replacement for the Ben Davis, that people were looking for something new and exciting. And so there was this competition to find an apple growing somewhere in the country that could be the next big apple, because the Ben Davis people were, a lot of the growers at least, were, mm-hmm. you know, just kind of tired of that apple. They were looking for something new and fresh. And so there was this competition, and the Red Delicious, it wasn't called that at the time, won that competition to replace the Ben Davis. And okay. It did a pretty good job, because you don't really find Ben Davises anymore. You do find them in some smaller heirloom apple orchards, but they are pretty difficult to find. I did see some growing. I went to the Cornell Research Station, and they have an heirloom apple orchard, and I saw some growing there. I would bet seeds Savers in Iowa also has them. They
have
a huge apple orchard. It's well worth the trip if you're ever there. I think they grow 700 different varieties of apples. So they probably have some Ben Davis as well.
And Mary in Lebanon, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Well, you were talking about apples, you know, for baking, and I don't know if you're familiar with the greening, but that's what my mother always wanted to make an apple pie for baking, was a greening apple. And I know you can get them. Because at Watertown at the farm market, this one orchard always has greening apples. I didn't happen to buy any, but and another old time variety is Wolf River, and I think that was more of a baking apple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
Then,
I'm sorry.
And then we had on our farm, and the tree is still standing. It has to be over 100 years old because it was from my grandmother, and that was the wine sap apple, and that was an early apple, and it was. You know, always people wanted that for applesauce, but it was and that was not a sweet apple, it was a tart apple.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should mention too, you know, the reason you find more eating apples in the store now instead of the cooking apples that a lot of you are obviously looking for, that I'm looking for too, that are harder to find, that you have to go to the smaller orchards or smaller growers to find, is that people weren't really eating fresh apples until the 20th century. People were more often drinking their apples. Our country was really built on cider consumption. Every family had an apple orchard in their yard. Cider was considered a safe drink for children as well as their parents. People used to pay for things with cider. So it was really kind of a currency. And people weren't really eating a lot of the fresh fruit. It was really when the temperance movement came about in the late 19th century that cider was kind of demonized along with a lot of other alcoholic beverages. And so there was kind of a PR campaign launched by the apple industry to encourage people to eat fresh fruit because it just wasn't something that a lot of people were doing. And this is where you get the apple a day keeps the doctor away. This isn't an old saying. I mean, it's
actually pretty new.
Yeah, it's a marketing slogan that came out in 1904 by a Missouri fruit grower named J.T. Stinson. And he coined that phrase at the 1904 St. Louis World's Fair. And it was really to, you know, tell people that apples are a healthful fruit and that you should start eating them. And this really led to a lot of growers to, instead of doing the baking apples, because people were baking with apples before then, as well as making cider. But it really led to most of our commercial varieties being these kind of sweet eating apples instead of the baking apples.
There you go, Mary. Thank you so much. Jacob in Oak Creek, on to you now. Hi, Jacob.
Hello. I was wondering if you ever heard of an apple that tastes like cashews and caramel.
So a nut.
So it's like a naturally a natural caramel apple?
Boy, that'd be nice.
I was listening to a show on NPR, and they said there was a apple contest in England where people would see which apple was the best, and this has won a few times, I think. And they said it's quite a homely-looking apple, but I was just curious if you ever heard of it before.
I've certainly read about apples that have kind of nutty flavors to them. I don't know in particular which one you're referencing, but, you know, there are tens of thousands of varieties of apples that look very different and all taste very different. You know, we have this idea in our mind of what an apple tastes like, that it's kind of this crunchy, sweet, tart fruit, but not all apples taste like that, and not all of their flesh is like that either. And you do find a lot of, you know, we see these really beautiful apples, but there's a lot of apples that don't look so hot. They're kind of, you know, mottled on the outside and kind of rough, and their texture inside kind of can be like sandpapery almost.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a really wide variety of flavors that you'll find in apples. If you really start going and trying to seek out these local apples, they're hard to find, unfortunately. This is, you know, everyone used to really have these local orchards that were a real taste of place. And I think it's much harder to find now. But if you can find them, then you'll find these apples that have nutty flavors, some that taste more like pineapple, some that are very citrusy and lemony almost. You know, there's a banana apple, and part of the reason why it's called that is because it has kind of a banana-y flavor to it. So there's really a wide range of what an apple can actually taste like.
Thank you very much for calling. Willie in Madison, your turn. Hi, Willie.
Hi. Two questions. Thank you very much. This has been a very interesting show. Is it true that all domestic apples originated long ago in the mountains above Alma-Ata in Kazakhstan? Second question, Wolf River apples. My grandmother had a tree, and she said she usually made apple pies out of Wolf River apples because she said really she was kind of lazy, and you could make an apple pie out of only two of the apples. They were so huge.
Well, the answer to your first question is yes. Yes, all domesticated apples are believed to have come from these mountains above Alma-Ata in Kazakhstan, just as you said. That is the latest theory and probably the right one. People were really spent much of the 20th century trying to figure out where apples originated from. And there was actually a Russian scientist who kind of stumbled on these apple forests in the 20s, and unfortunately he ended up being killed by Stalin, and his knowledge about apples and the things that he discovered while he was there kind of remained hidden for many decades. But he had speculated that that's where apples were from, and now we're pretty sure that that is where all apples come from. And as for Wolf Rivers, yeah, they did tend to be very big, and they were well known for being good cooking apples. They basically fall apart the moment you get some heat on them. So they were, I guess, perfect for lazy. You don't have to use too many of them, and they fall apart instantly. So,
oh, man. Jason in Crawford County, on to you. Hi.
Hi. I was just wondering if you save seeds from apples that were good ones and then dry them and then plant them. And are they worth the effort? Would you get apple trees that would produce?
Yeah, I was in the Shawamigan National Forest this weekend, and I ate a couple of apples, and I threw them on the ground out there, and I wondered if they would actually turn into an apple tree.
They might turn into an apple tree, but they won't turn into the apple that you were eating. So if you were eating a Granny Smith apple and you planted a Granny Smith seed, you're not going to get a Granny Smith apple. The only way to get a Granny Smith apple is to graft that tree. So the offspring in those seeds will combine the genetic material of its two parents, just like people, and produce an offspring apple tree that can be very, very different. It could taste terrible. It could taste a lot better than the parent. So yeah, it's highly likely that you'll get something, but it won't be the apple that you originally planted.
Could you figure out the variety from that? Or
no.
Nope. No, you can't, because
you know one parent but not the other.
Right. And because, you know, you'll just have no idea. It will be a unique apple type. If there wasn't for grafting, every apple in the world would be different. So you have no idea what exactly that apple is going to be.
There you go. Thank you for calling. Chet in Athens, Wisconsin. On to you. Hi, Chet.
Yes, I want to share with your listeners, thanks to grafting, I bought from Stark Brothers in Louisiana, Missouri, about 10 years ago, these spire apple trees. They grow straight up. If a listener has a very narrow spot where you need to have, where you'd like to have an apple tree, these are wonderful trees because they're only about 2 feet wide and they grow straight up. And it's kind of unique that you can grow an apple tree due to grafting that produces that shape.
Yeah, that is that's an interesting shape. You know, a lot of apple trees that are producing these commercial apples have really, they don't look like an apple tree that you know, might see growing in your yard. One of the big things that apple growers are using now are these dwarf varieties because they'll produce apples in a much shorter period of time. I had mentioned that apples trees can take up to 10 years to produce apples, but a dwarf tree will do it, you know, in 4 to 5 years. And the trees take up a lot less space. And so if you go into a modern apple orchard, the trees are very different than you might imagine in your head that they look like. And the Stark brothers have actually been very big in apple growing and apple breeding since the 19th century. They're the ones who discovered the Golden Delicious and the Red Delicious apples.
There you go. Thank you for calling in. Marie in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Marie.
Are you familiar with Northern Spy?
I am familiar with the Northern Spy.
That's a cool name, isn't it?
Yeah, I love the name. What's the apple like?
Oh, it's good.
Is it one of your favorites?
No.
No?
I like the name.
you like the name. Well, there are so many cool names out there for apples.
Yeah, you know, I think that's one of the fun things in researching this book and learning more about apples is just they all have such fantastic names. You know, it's kind of, I don't know, I mean, a lot of them are very place-based. Things like the Wolf River kind of tell you kind of where that apple came from. But you find all kinds of things, you know, all the different pippin apples. There's also all different kinds of spies. There's a prairie spy that's from Minnesota that's you can find around here. They just have fantastic, fantastic names.
And you have a fantastic book, Erica.
Oh, thank you, Larry.
That was so much fun. It's always a great pleasure to have Erica Jadick on the program because every time she has a new book, she brings this whole wealth of knowledge. And now she's an apple expert. she's done a wonderful job, and we did not even scratch the surface of the topics in her book. It's called Apple: A Global History, the author, Erica Jadick. Erica, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Coming up, we'll be taking a look at how you can stay on track with fitness during the holidays. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.